off. Shoots it, deflected right in. Pietrangelo safe rebound. Stastny stopped by Pietrangelo. I don't believe that save. Neither does Peter Stastny. He can't believe the save that Pietrangelo just made on him as Frankie sparkling on that maneuver there to stop and rob Peter Stastny. He should get 5-10 for that.
Hello and welcome to episode 106 of Tendy Talk, presented by the Hockey Podcast Network and the BLPA Podcast Networks. I'm your host, Joe, better known as Wash Up Goalie on social media. This week, I chat with another goalie who is also a stand-up comedian, the third of this podcast. This week's guest is Tyler Ross, who played some junior hockey and ACHA hockey at Kent State. So, without further ado, let's get to the conversation with Tyler. Yeah, well, Tyler, hey, thanks for joining me on the podcast. It's kind of fun to talk to you. You know, it's always fun when goalies reach out to me because, truth be told, it's not always easy to find guests. Sometimes and other times, it's you know, like right now, I'm working on lining a few up, but it's always finding time on calendar. So it's great that you reached out. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's so funny. I obviously saw Scott Darling's that stuck out to me because I'm in Chicago as well, and I also do comedy. So I saw that, and it's one of those things where I have such a yearning now to try to talk sports with people in a world where so many people don't talk sports at all or are almost against it, basically, to a certain extent. So as soon as I saw that, I was like, man, I would love a chance to just talk some hockey for a little bit. So this was great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's happy to. It's funny because I work in the education industry and very similar, you know, in that most of the people I work with, you know, they refer to it as sports ball. You know, it's not the thing. Now, there's one of my colleagues. She's out. She lives in Washington now, but she's originally from San Jose. Huge Sharks fan. So we'll have side, you know, conversations during team meetings. In chats talking about, you know, last night's hockey game, this or that. It's kind of funny.
That's hilarious because I previously to last year, I was working at a Chicago public school, so also in education.
Okay.
And one of the teachers that I started working with a couple of years back, we were just talking and I kind of came into light that she has two sons that play hockey. And I was like, cool. That's awesome. What position? And she's like, both of my kids are goalies. And I was like, what is wrong with you? I'm sure there must be something going on in your head that you let two of your sons become goalies. That's what's your pulse like at on a normal basis? So it was one of the most like striking things to hear someone say. So yeah, that's such a funny, like, work person that just gets it.
Yeah, so I have to ask, because I grew up in Chicago, I now live in Minnesota, what school were you working at?
So I was in the north side in Lincoln Park. It was Alcott Elementary School, actually.
All right, north side. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm a south sider. If I would have gone to the public schools, I would have gone to Mount Greenwood Park schools. But as you know, living in Chicago, many people wind up going to the private schools. So I went to Catholic school, went to the parish school, and then I went to Brother Rice before I moved up here for college. But
nice.
Yeah, one of my high school friends, she works for the school system and she does IT stuff. So yeah.
Awesome.
So if I'm not mistaken, you're originally from the Philadelphia area, correct?
So I actually grew up in the Cleveland area.
Cleveland, okay. Yeah.
I played for the Barons growing up, so I did the whole AAA thing out of Cleveland. So even listening to some of your other episodes, people are like name dropping rinks. And I'm like, yep, I can check that one off the list. You know, many a times I've had to trek out to Illinois to do like Team Illinois, CYA, you know, Team Mission, and then all these other like, you know, random AAA teams. So yeah, I lived in Cleveland growing up, but played juniors in Philly.
So Cleveland is not a hockey hotbed. There's a reason the Barons didn't last there. I mean, they have, the Monsters now in the AHL. Are they in the AHL or the ECHL?
They're in the AHL, yeah.
When I think of Cleveland, I think of football and baseball. I mean, some people probably think basketball, but I'm not a basketball guy. I'm a hockey guy. So, I grew up during the Jordan era, and I don't like basketball. That says something about me being a kid from Chicago.
Yeah.
So what got you interested in hockey, being from, you know, the hockey hotbed of Cleveland.
So it was a thing where both my parents are really into hockey, and I think just like the opportunity for me to learn to skate kind of came up, and then I really took to skating at like five. You know, I was learning how to skate already, and the rink that was the local program was near my parents' house, my grandparents' house, that I, you know, went to a lot. So it just all kind of worked out. And as I started, like, my parents signed me up, which you don't realize is weird that they randomly signed you up for hockey when they really didn't play hockey until later in life. Cause like you said, they could have easily been like, get over and play basketball, football, and all those others. But for whatever reason, just took to hockey, kept it going, and then became a goalie somehow.
So through all of that, I was going to say, what prompted you to want to be a goalie? I mean, aside from it, you know, goalies are a little bit weird, and I would almost, I'm kind of surprised we don't get more goalies out of Cleveland, because everybody I know from there has kind of got that goalie personality.
I think, much like a lot of people, I think I just wanted to wear the gear and see if it was as cool as it was. I feel like most people give that answer. And as soon as I was hearing people like give that, I was like, cool, I'm not as weird for feeling weird about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was definitely the equipment. I mean, once I was like, yeah, I'm going to play goalie, I think I bought my first set of goalie pads and things with my first communion money. So I think that's what it went directly to.
You know, and I think that's almost a sign of the era we grew up in. I mean, I listen to some of your comedy. I know I'm older than you, because you were referencing finding a 40-year-old to ask questions about the car. I'm like, so Tyler's looking to me for car advice, which is not a good idea either. But I do know mine's on electric vehicle, at least. But, you know, our era, like, if we wanted stuff, like, we saved up our communion money. I mean, Everybody in my grade, like, we were looking forward to our communion, not because of it was some sacred religious sacrament, but it was like, we get to have our communion party, and like, everybody we know got at least $100 out of it. So like, they were then rich with $100, you know, the stuff you could buy with it. But like, I bought so much of my equipment because I shoveled snow. Like, I shoveled the whole block. And kids just don't do that anymore.
Mm-mm. Yeah. I worked for goalie camps for a while, and I think I worked as an instructor for one for a whole like month summer. Ended up getting like a free pair of pads out of it, or like a helmet. And, through the coach, who had like a deal with certain things, he's like, all right, if you work this through, I'll get you these. And I'm like, perfect. I can spend a month here and get pads out of the end of it. That works great.
Yeah. That's a pretty darn good deal right there. I worked my college's hockey camp going into my freshman year, and I want to say we made like $275 a week or something. And
that sounds about right.
You know, but we were living on campus. They were, you know, they were feeding us three meals a day, and I had zero expenses for those 5 weeks. So, and then we could make more money if we did the airport run. It was like $50 an airport run, picking kids up or dropping them off.
Oh, okay. I was like, the airport, is this some hockey camp along only airport routes that I'm unaware of? So
no. But so I volunteered to do that like virtually every weekend. So, you know, I got a couple extra bucks every week out of it, and came home and went straight to the pro shop. I went to Jerry's on the south side there in Crestwood. That's awesome. And I picked up, you know, a pair of pro spec pads that, you know, off the shelf, but it was like, kids today, they're just like, mom, dad, I need new pads, you know, and it's like, then taken care of for them. Whereas me, it's like, no, I worked for it. It was only a few of my pieces of equipment that mom and dad really bought. And it was because I couldn't shovel snow yet at that, you know, I was too young. Mm-hmm. But after that, you know, I just always realized that they were paying a pretty penny for me to play. So if I could save up. And the other thing I knew is, if mom and dad were buying the equipment, they were going to get something that did the job, but was economical. But if I saved up, I could get what I wanted.
Interesting. There were times when my parents definitely did help. And I think playing in AAA, being in Cleveland, we were the only people that were like, well, if we're going to do this, like, let's try to make sure the best, like, we drove up. Do you know the store right on the border of Lake Erie or Erie, and it's called Don Simmons? Have you ever been to? Okay, yeah,
I haven't been there, but their ads were always in the back of USA Hockey and everything else. Yeah,
we many a times, if I needed gear, we drove up. It was like, all right, the family's driving 3 hours to go to Don Simmons to go see if like they have the set. Like, it's finally time. We've been building up for this trip. And then, yeah, drive 3 hours just to go buy hockey equipment, because there was really nowhere in Cleveland to do. It was like either drive to Michigan or drive to Canada.
Yeah. No, Don Simmons. It's funny you say it, because my goalie coach in college, his son wore Don Simmons equipment. They just, they ordered it, you know, and they're mad.
I don't know anyone that's actually worn Don Simmons gear. I just knew that they, I had like TPS growing up, you know, the ones with the like rolls in the middle of the pad.
Yes.
A pair of those I had from there, the like Cujo glove and blocker from there.
Yeah. And they had decent masks too. You know, and their masks were, I mean, if we're being honest, they were knockoffs of the name brands, but they didn't have the price of the name brands, which the price of the name brands compared to today, it was a drop in the hat, but still. Yeah. So go on.
I was going to say my grandma will be really mad I'm telling this, but I had an old helmet that had like a big chip out of the, like the chin from a puck, because it was one of the plasticky ones.
Yeah.
And my grandma got in a car accident, and like she was whatever, something happened with her back, and then she was like assessing it. And for whatever reason, I kind of like convinced her to say my mask was in the trunk because it was beat up so bad, so that they could include it. It was like an insurance. I'm sure we are past the time where she could be in trouble for this. So if you leak this to Progressive or whatever insurance company she has, I'm sure she's not going down for it. But I remember being like, can you just say this was in your trunk, so maybe we can get like some extra cash, or I can get like a nice Bauer one actually. So yeah, I mean, you got to do what you got to do for equipment is basically what I'm trying to say.
Exactly. And you know what, if there is anybody listening from Progressive, they're hockey people, so they're gonna be like, yeah, well, you know, statue of limitations has passed, and you know, it's all good. We condone it, because it's all about your safety.
I love that. Thank you for putting such a positive spin on insurance fraud.
Yes. So you know, you're playing, like I said, in the hockey hotbed of Cleveland. You know, and they do have the AAA, but it's interesting because, like, I have a high school classmate. She lives down in Alabama now. And when you start playing, AAA is really the only option in some of these areas, like Cleveland, or in her case, Birmingham. And that adds the added expense of travel. Like, it's not like your game, like here in Minnesota, you think travel hockey. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, we're in the Twin Cities, we're going up to Duluth overnight. It's like, no, you're going to Chicago, you're going out to Philly, you're going down to Birmingham, you're going to Nashville, you're going all over the place.
And lucky for me, like, at when I'm a 90 birth year, shout out to one of the few places you can reference just your birth year and it makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm a 90, so back when I was playing, it was called the Midwest Elite, and I know there's like 20 different versions of these leagues now. Yes. But like, we only, so we go to Michigan, Pittsburgh, and then Illinois was the farthest, thankfully. And there was every once in a while you'd have to drive to like Canada and go to Toronto. And I can probably name more cities in Canada than I probably want to admit. But thankfully, like, it wasn't how it is now. Cause again, going back to the parent that at the school I worked at, they're like, yeah, we have to go to tournaments in Denver. We have to go. I'm like, man, that is a lot. I mean, I do take for granted, and when I do a lot more travel now with stand up, how expensive hotels are. And then when I see like a team go into a hotel I'm staying, I'm like, these darn kids, I know they're gonna be a problem.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was that problem, that was me.
Well, you got to bring your mini stick with and like just crash the mini stick games in the hallway.
Yeah. That's awesome. I'm gonna consider that as part of my travel plan.
Yeah, just, you know, throw the mini stick in the bag and, you know, come out in the hallway, kids think you're gonna yell at them and complain about the noise and be like, all right, which team am I on?
And then just pull a sick toe drag and then just walk away.
Yeah, throw them into the walls. You know? Yeah, but yeah, it's the travel aspect of it. You know, and I was fortunate in Chicago we had house league hockey, but I heard somebody actually refer to it as travel house league because of the way I really like the way it's set up because I played for St. Jude. So, you know, we would play Homewood Flossmoor, Oak Lawn, and the Hawks, their house league teams. But, you know, we were still in one small area of the South Side. And one of the main reasons I only played house league was because dad was a fireman, mom was working. So it was, you know, they didn't have the time to do the traveling to get me to the, you know, practices and the games all over the place. So it's like, you're going to play house league. It worked out for me. I want to play in school and college and all that. But it's like, if we had more house league hockey, I wonder how many more kids would be playing hockey. Because even in Minnesota, we don't have house league hockey.
Oh, interesting.
It's all travel. So, you know, your travel for a birth year, you're going to have an A team, a B team, a B2 team, a C team, a C2. And some of these organizations have B3, B4.
Oh, my God.
It's like, just have one or two travel teams and put everybody else into the house league, you know, and play within your district at least. And everybody's still going to play. And they're going to have more fun.
Yeah, I love that. I'm electing you for USA Hockey president for this, based on this, okay? That's your campaign speech. I love it.
What's funny is I used to coach at the high school level, so I was going through the USA Hockey clinics, and they advocate, you know, more practice than games, and everybody in the class is like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. And then they go back to their association, and their association's like, no, we're going to have host weekend tournaments because that makes money for the association. You start looking at it very much reminds me of higher education, where when you start looking at the financials of some of these youth sports, this isn't unique to hockey. I see it in baseball and basketball and everything. You start looking into the financials and they got these kids out fundraising four or five times a season. And then you look at the financials and they got like multi-million dollar endowments. It was like, you could operate for 3 years and not charge anybody a dime and still have money in the bank.
Yeah.
But you're still charging all of the money and then asking them to raise more money. It's like, why, what's the point? It's crazy. So getting back to your hockey journey.
Yeah,
so
sure.
You're playing AAA hockey in Cleveland, but then you wind up, you know, getting to the junior level and you go out to Philly. What brought you out there?
So my goalie coach I had worked with from like childhood on was actually based out in Westchester, which is a suburb of Philadelphia. That's Dave Marlin was my goalie coach growing up. And I went to him for years, and it was past that time where I was getting out of midgets, and you know, it's tough out in these streets at junior tryouts for goalies. Luckily, I had a great connection with him and the junior program that they were forming, the Junior Flyers in the Atlantic Junior Hockey League. So he was able to kind of like get me seen in front of the coach. I was training with him. The coach would literally, you know, he was one of these guys that loved doing drills, loved being the shooter, loved going full blow. So
yeah,
we had like some good training sessions together, and I ended up moving out there to play with them, which was funny because I moved out there and then this goalie coach also, for whatever reason, had a connection with the Gatineau Olympiques in the Quebec Major Junior League. So I was up there for like 4 days. I get to Philly, do training camp, leave, go up to Gatineau for like a week. No one speaks English that I'm training with. So I'm literally like, I went from not knowing any teammates to leaving said teammates up in Quebec. That didn't work out. And then I went back to Philly for the year.
I mean, haven't any of these Quebecians, I don't know if that's what you even call them, Quebecites, I don't know. But haven't they ever seen Canadian bacon? Everything's got to be multilingual.
Yeah. Well, and not only that, it was right before training camp actually started. It was like pre-training camp. So it wasn't like against the amateur rules or whatever, blah blah blah. So there was a lot of the other people that were transferred in. So like my best friend that I was hanging out was from Germany, and like he didn't speak English either. So we kind of like, mm-hmm. And he's like, mm-hmm, yeah.
Well, in one of the guys I coach with, he played in the East Coast Hockey League for a year, and he said, you know, you would get those European players that couldn't speak a lick of English. Mm-hmm. But once you get on the ice, you know, you find a way to communicate. You get on the same page. There's a way.
Absolutely.
You know, so you're out in Philly now, away from home. But then you wind up in the Nall playing for Kenai up in Alaska. I mean, talk about a culture shock.
Oh my God. I mean, and this was probably like the hardest year of hockey I've ever had, because same for a bunch of reasons. One, juniors, you know, they even at the in the North American League at the time, which was tier two, I guess, they paid for a few things, but like the final training camp or like final cut tryout was in Rochester, Minneapolis. Okay, I gotta find a way to get to Minneapolis. Luckily they're they were housing us, so there's one less thing. But like, yeah. I think we talked like one of my uncles into giving me like airline points to fly out there. Made the team, and then yeah, flew it to Alaska, and trip. It was a bad omen to start, because even getting there, we were taxiing backwards, and I looked out, and you know, hockey bags are very distinct, yep. Right? They look only like hockey bags, and we're backing up. I look out the window, and I'm like, that is my gear sitting outside the plane still. So
we're moving.
And we are moving. Yeah. So we got there, and yeah, my equipment didn't even show till like the day after. My bullet parent picked me up. They were so sweet. We're talking. And it was, yeah, it is a culture shock. I mean, the town you drive into, their welcome sign is like, welcome to Kenai, death by moose this year. Because like, if you hit a moose, you die. You don't just, it's not like a deer, like it could be bad or could not. Like those things are like sturdy. You hit it, it just keeps it moving with its day. So that was the first thing I was like, all right, I guess this is a new thing.
Yeah, I have a college friend that lives in Fairbanks. She came down here for school. Yikes. And she stays in Fairbanks, and she'll post pictures of moose, multiple moose in her backyard every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're not small animals.
No, it was very eye-opening. But yeah, I was there for maybe 3 months probably before I got cut. And then again, juniors, tough. Like, you have to fly your own way to Alaska, try to pay for trips. We were on, like, a three-week trip in the Continental. I was in Iowa, had a very bad, like, 2 weeks to start the season. I will never forget getting, like, sat down in this hotel in Iowa, which was like, so we released you this morning, and we'll just let you know that tomorrow we'll be able to drop you off at the airport and, you know, just arrange your stuff and thanks for everything. And I was like, I'm sorry. So now I have to fly back from Iowa to my home in Ohio. I have to get my stuff back from Alaska. And then it was all like all at once, you know? And like you said, like the dollars are just adding up left and right for these kind of things.
And you're a kid figuring this out too. It's, you know.
Yeah. I think I was 19 at the time when that was happening. And like I said, my parents didn't play hockey. So it's not like they were like, hey, been there, done that. We're ready to move on to the next step, you know?
Yeah, you know, you think of how they have these parental advisors, and they're not cheap, but they make sense because they understand this stuff. They may not have been through it, but they've worked with kids who have, and they're like, this is how you do it. But yeah,
and that's the worst thing I did to that teacher at the school I was at. I was like, oh, that's so cool. Have they considered like juniors or whatever? And they weren't really aware of what juniors were. And then I told her, and she's like, wow. So there's all these like camps you can sign up. I'm like, oh no, I'm like putting you into this crazy world that could be so like tough to deal with. And yeah, it's like, if you don't know, you really have no idea what's going on with it. Even when I explain to people, like most people that play college hockey, a good amount, like they just didn't go to school for a few years, just playing juniors, and like no other sport is set up like that. It's so weird.
Like I played Division III hockey, and at the time in the MIAC, about half the roster, the kids played juniors before they came to the school, but about half of us graduated high school and then we went to college. Now I look at every MIAC roster, there's like maybe one or two kids that played high school hockey and went straight to college. It's like, even down to, and you're seeing it at the AHA level now too, where it's like, mm-hmm. yeah, you got to play junior hockey to play club hockey even. And it's crazy how normal that's just become. But there's also a lot more opportunities for junior, you know, I think the term junior hockey's gotten watered down too, because you have some of these junior leagues that, again, they're money makers.
When I got cut from Sedalia, I was kind of just like living at my dad's house, emailing any junior team I could find an email for, of like, can I get a tryout? What's going on? And luckily, like some friends from like midgets were playing at at the time it would have been like tier three juniors at the Toledo Cherokee. And they're like, well, come skate with us and figure it out. So I don't remember what that league was called, but yeah, when I was looking them up, I was like, there's so many junior teams now. It was almost like, you know, it's one of those things I barely even recognize it, cause I haven't really kept up with it that much. But yeah, you look at it and you're like, they're just calling anything a junior team, it seems like.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, one of my teammates, he was a GM and coach in the NA3 for many years. The only reason he's not anymore is his kids are playing and now he wants to coach them. And I was like, all right, that's a good reason.
Yeah.
But friends of ours, their son was going to go to school down in Florida, and there was a junior team down in Florida that, you know, where his school was. And they're like, oh, you're from Minnesota. We've never seen you play, but we know you played hockey in Minnesota. He didn't even play the high school team. He played what they called junior gold, which is like, if you get cut from the high school team, it's essentially midget hockey up here, but they really don't have midget hockey. So if you get cut from the high school team, you can play junior gold in your community. And so he played that. And for many years, junior gold was basically like the federal league, you know, in Slapshot. It was just brawl after brawl, just crazy. But they're like, oh, you played hockey up there, come play for our junior team. And they're like, oh, yeah. And it was like, okay, before you can even step on the ice, we need a $10,000 check.
Oh, my Lord.
So I reached out to my buddy who was coaching in the NA3, and I was like, hey, our friend's kid is looking at playing in this league. What are your thoughts? He's like, well, he'll be able to play hockey. It's okay hockey. He goes, but it's going to be expensive. They're going to call it junior hockey, but it's not junior hockey. It's just it's a hockey league for kids that age.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, I'll tell him that. But, you know, he played, I think, 1 year. And he had fun, you know, and at the end of the day, that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, his mom and dad, they could afford it. That's the thing, you know, and because if I were in that situation, my mom and dad would have been like, we'd love to do it, but that's pretty steep. You're going to have to help us out.
Yeah. I mean, when I was playing juniors for the junior Flyers, both years, I ended up working at the rink as well in the mornings to like help get cash together, because again, you had to pay to be on the team and yep. all the other expenses, like, you know, sticks and all that still. So yeah, I mean, I was up in the morning cleaning locker rooms every day with a couple other teammates. So yeah, you know, you just try to figure it out any way you can.
And then at some point you decide, you know what, I've had my fun, I'm gonna go to college. And you go to Kent State. And they have an ACHA team. They're a decent one. In fact, past guest Shea Spanier, he played at Kent State. What drew you to Kent State?
So a few things. One, it's really close to my parents' house. So it was one of those things where I was like, all right, if I'm like making that transition back to being a student, and, you know, I wasn't really getting a lot of like D3 calls like some of my friends were, so I was kind of like, what's going to be the most comfortable situation to like transition me back into going to school after not for 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
Because the year before I went back out to Philly, finished the season there, and it was like fine, but it was just one of those things where I was like, man, am I gonna be 21 with playing juniors in the American Junior Hockey League with, you know, with like 15, 16 year olds? It feels weird. It feels weird. Cause, and that's the other thing, when I describe juniors, I'm like, they're like, what's the age range? Like I just took my girlfriend and her parents. We went to a ECHL hockey game, and they're like, what's the like age for these things? I'm like, well, juniors would be like 16 to 21. And I'm like, it's insane. But yeah, Kent was good, cause I had a lot of friends that went there. It was like the hometown college in Ohio. situation. And then I did have a good relationship with a few of the players that were already playing there, played for the Barons growing up. They were a few years older than me, but you know, as we mentioned, Ohio hockey, very small. So you pretty much know everybody.
Yeah.
Who, you know, were like, you like juniors, come play here. We'll have fun like you were, and you'll do school too. So yeah, ended up going to Kent for a couple of years, played hockey the first year and really hated it. It was tough to go from like everyone really is going for it and like trying to do stuff, and not to say that AZHA Division I hockey isn't like serious. It was just like, I could feel myself not caring. I'm like, what are we doing here? You know?
Right. And I'm with John Butchergrass in that ACHA hockey is college hockey.
Mm-hmm. Like, yes.
I hate that argument, but there is that difference between NCAA hockey and club hockey. And to your point, it's kind of that, I don't want to say compete level, but it's that seriousness level.
Floor is just different for like who gets let in. And I don't mean that as a negative connotation, yeah, but you know, there's a, you know, I was used to practice, you know, when I was in Quebec, for example, Claude Giroux was one of the shooters for the goalie sessions I was doing. Yeah. To go and then like, I'm playing in practice with the teammates and you're like a guy that can barely get the puck off the ice just cause you know, that's that last roster spot, which happens, was like, yeah, this is really where I'm at right now. And the coach that we had, he was like an old school goalie. Like he really believed that, you know, you should be standing up. You should be standing almost at the hash marks. If the puck's at the blue line, like cutting down that's how you should play. And I was very like, my goalie coach did a lot of like training in England and stuff. So I was very hands, like my hands were loose and I was always like, he at the middle of the season was so fed up with me and my goalie partner. We for a few games, I'm not kidding, he would switch us like shifts. So if there was like a stoppage of play every like 5-7 minutes, we were switching because he was just like was so over just us not playing the way he wanted us to play. And that was another like straw that broke the camel's back. I was like, if I'm doing shifts like this, there's nothing more embarrassing than that. I mean, you can imagine how much we got chirped by teams watching. And that was the other thing. I'm like, he is knowingly putting me in a situation where I'm getting ridiculed for this. Like, yeah, I know this is bad too.
Well, as a coach, their job is to put you in a position to succeed. And he was putting the two of you in a position to fail.
I mean, he's like, I'm going to treat you like the forwards and shift and whoever's having the hot game, I'm going to ride you out the rest of the game once it's defined. And it's like, you can't get a rhythm in a game if you're being like you think about like, again, going back to like junior tryouts, you get thrown in there for one period to try to like showcase your talent. It's like, how are you going to really like show who you are through like a full 3-period game when you're just kind of getting plopped in the middle or towards the end or whatever, or even at the beginning when no one knows what's going on. So
loved about like high school and college tryouts, you know, after freshman year, it's like the coaches know who you are. They know your style. So even though you're getting that one period in a scrimmage during tryouts, if you crap the bed, you know, don't worry about it. But if you're that incoming freshman, you're like, oh my God, what just happened to me? Because that's all they know about you is that one period. But the returning goalies, it's kind of like, okay, they know my body of work.
And that was what nice, like, I really appreciated that growing up at the Barons. Again, it was like pretty small community. Everyone kind of knew, like, for the most part, who was coming back year to year. It was just kind of like different coaches for most of the organization. So yeah, it was like, that's a level where everyone kind of knows where everyone's at. And, that was nice. But yeah, you start going to junior tryouts and stuff like that, where you have no idea who's already on the team that's just there to skate, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I've had this conversation with other people, not on the podcast, but about junior hockey. And the ones that I know that have played or coached, they always say, if they don't invite you to the camp, don't even think about going, because all they want is your check to pay for the ice time and a body on the ice. They're not seriously looking at you if you're just filling out the form to go in. If they invite you, that's a different story.
NBA fans, it's time to bring the hoops action to the palm of your hand with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. This week, new customers can bet $5 and win $200 in free bets instantly. Plus, for a limited time, all new and existing customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Go to DraftKings Sportsbook app today, opt in, and place a same-game parlay on any NBA game, and if it doesn't hit, you'll get a free bet back. Growing up in Chicago during the Jordan era, I wish this was around then because you know where my money would be. Download the app now and sign up with code THPN. New customers can bet $5 on the NBA and get $200 in free bets instantly. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA, with code THPN. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. Void in Ohio. See show notes for details.
And I was like very aggressive too. I think about like, I was aware of that after like my first years of trying out for junior teams, probably like midget minor and midget major. I was like calling coaches like crazy. Like I was the guy on the phone. Like, can I try to talk to you? Can I try to like, I learned to video edit because I was like cutting my own highlight reels to like burn DVDs to like mail to coaches. Like I was, you know, going to FedEx to like mail these DVDs across the country to, you know, Lincoln, Nebraska or whatever it was. But yeah, I mean, it's a tough life out there doing all that as a goalie for sure.
Well, and again, I'm older than you. I'm in my 40s. So it's like, if all of that was available to me then, I would have been doing the same thing. You know, I'm a beer leaguer that puts my stuff on YouTube. So yes, I would have been doing that then. But you know, what was available to me back then was, you know, the US mail.
Yeah.
You know, mom and dad wound up getting a camcorder at some point and they would record games, but you know, they're up in the stands. So, you know, what you see of me is about that big. You really don't see how well I was playing. But I remember we went to England when I was 15 years old to visit family. My grandma was a war bride, so we went over to visit them. And I discovered they had a hockey league over there. And it was funny because like the first night we were there, we walk into the neighborhood pub and I'm wearing an Eddie Balfour jersey. And there's this old guy at the end of the bar and he recognizes it. We start talking hockey. He knew all about the NHL and was a big fan of the English league. And so my aunt and uncle wound up coming to visit us the next year. And he sent all of the, like a stack of magazines like that thick from the English league. Well, within
that's
you
awesome.
Know, the internet existed then, but it was, you know, still dial up, you know, it took 5 minutes for a page to download.
Any player thinking about like, oh, I wonder if the English hockey league has a website to go see what they're up to. Like you probably weren't even connected to try to think about that.
No, but so I was searching, I was asking Jeeves, because Google wasn't around, you know.
I love that.
I was asking
in your free AOL internet hours. Yeah
if these teams had websites, and if they did, I was emailing coaches like, hey, I am you know, American goalie graduating high school, these are my stats, you know, I'd love the opportunity to come over and play. And you know, those that did respond were like, thanks, but no thanks. But then there was one, I don't remember who it was. I think it was with the Cardiff Devils. And I think that's why I still have a soft spot for them. You know, he responded, he's like, look, looks great. He goes, but they're only allowed so many imports. And they want the import for the goal scores.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's like, we can find serviceable goalies here in the UK. Like, we're not going to use one of our import spots for a goalie. Like, that's just the matter of it. It's like, okay, so that road has ended. But it was like, I was doing everything I knew about at that point. I did have an opportunity to go to the Chicago Chill
Ooh, okay.
junior tryout But they called me literally the day of because I had filled out the form to go. And
they're like, we have an extra spot and $250 under budget. Quick, get on the line.
Well, they literally called me like 2 hours before we were supposed to take the ice. And I was like,
oh, wow.
I'm on the south side and it's rush hour. I will be there in 3 hours. And yeah. They're like, oh, that's not going to work out. It's like, yeah, no shit. Call me early. Yeah,
right.
You know, it's like, so I almost had the chance to go skate with them, which if I look back, I know John Scott played for them around that same time. I wonder if he would have been at that camp. I wound up playing for a junior team. They were called the Chicago Force. They were from a league. It was this weird thing where like all the teams were down in like Florida, Georgia, Alabama, and Louisiana.
And then Chicago,
because the owner of the team was able to pay the league fee. but because of the travel, the team was able to carry four goalies instead of three. So I went through tryouts, made all of the cuts, and they weren't making it clear what the depth chart was for the goalies. And my high school tryouts were coming up, and I was like, I had it worked out with my, because we were practicing before school at Addison Ice Rink. And so I had it set up with my principal where if I was going to go the junior route, they were going to work with me and I was going to have a first period study hall. So I wouldn't miss school. I would just arrive late.
That's cool.
And then when we were on the road, they would make sure I got my homework. I was like, okay, cool. So it was like a week before my high school team's tryouts. And they were having meetings with all the players because it was like a week before the first road trip and they wanted to make sure we had everything we needed, blah, blah, blah. And I looked at the coaches and was like, so you haven't really given us a depth chart. I'm just wondering if I should stick around here and be the fourth goalie or if I should go back to my high school team and be the returning senior, you know, and be the starter.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, you know, We see this other kid as the starter. You probably be primarily on the bench. It's like, okay, well, thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to go back to my high school. And like, they just sat there like, you're turning down the opportunity to play junior hockey. It's like, yep. Yeah.
It's like, you're not really offering an opportunity to play. You're offering me an opportunity to have my name on a roster.
Yeah, exactly. And I made the right choice because the team folded halfway through the year and the league folded.
Oh, my God. That's worse than getting stuck in Iowa.
Well, and at one point I heard that like 3/4 of the team got arrested in Georgia for
Oh, my God.
There was like a giant like fiberglass peach on the side of the road that they tried rolling down the road or something. It was like, I'm glad I made the right decision.
I mean, leave it to any like junior team on the road to make a terrible decision like that. Like that doesn't surprise me at all.
Oh yeah.
Out of all the things you said, a team getting arrested, I'm like, yeah, I get behind that. Like I think about how many times I was like walking around a mall with my teammates in those like in our warm up suits because it's like, what else did you bring?
Yes.
Getting kicked out of like Dick's Sporting Goods because we're playing basketball in an aisle or whatever. So, and that's like at 15 or 14. Like, so you give them adults who are kind of on the road with one alcoholic coach, like who's in the home.
Yes.
You know, the rules seem pretty loose. So that's, yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all.
No adult supervisors. But it's funny you say it. Cause like when I was in college and we'd go on the road, it's very different because the coaches make it very clear. Like you're representing your school.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as we're off campus, you're representing your school. You're wearing the team polo or whatever. Everybody knows that this group is from the school. So you are on your best behavior. And it's like, yep, we are. It was kind of interesting, the difference in traveling with the school versus a junior team.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, if anything, the stories are, you know, who was drawing what on somebody's face while they fell asleep on the bus. You know, that was about it. Even the stories you hear of what junior teams did to, you know, rookies on the bus is like, that didn't happen in college because of that representation. You know, you're representing the school.
There's definitely a thing with juniors of like, you're not professional, but this like hazing rookie thing is just this, some sort of thing to have. I mean, when I was in Alaska, we had to do the coach. I know most junior teams will do like, or they used to, they'd have all the rookies dress up as girls and they go to dinner and then they have to pay the check. That was like a pretty common one when I was like in juniors, but our coach up there was like very against that. So we all had to dress up like babies. So,
because that was better.
Yeah, right. Like, well, I have so much more dignity in a diaper than I would a dress. Thank you so much for this. Yeah, it's like stuff like that. Or like, I've heard of people having to like ride entire rides and like the bathroom of the bus. It's like, who are these? Who are you? You know, like it's tough to like look back, but you're, you know, stuck in these team dynamics where you're like, well, yeah, I mean, they've been here for 3 years, so I guess they get to make up this arbitrary rule that rookies sit in the back or something.
I forget which college it was out in the East Coast that had the major hazing scandal when I was going into my freshman year. So at St. Mary's, our initiation, we would call it, would be the night of our red-white game. All of the freshman players had to wear their helmet to class. And on game day,
that's a fun one.
Right. On game day, you had to wear a shirt and tie. And that was just all of our sports teams. On game day, you had to dress nice. So girls would dress up, guys would wear a shirt and tie. But for hockey, we said, okay, freshman, you got to wear your helmet to class. But because of the hazing incident that was out east, I forget which school it was. I want to say it's Maine, but I don't want to say conclusively because it was bad. Like they made them do elephant walks and kinds of like ridiculous stuff. And because of that, like the NCAA came down hard on everybody with hazing, and it was deemed wearing the helmet to class was not okay. And we were like, what the hell? Like, this is ridiculous. So then as freshmen, I remember we decided nobody's making us do it, but we can still do it on our own.
Keep like the tradition. Cause that is, it's not humiliating per se. Like, sure, you're wearing a hockey helmet, but you know, I think if like once you realize what it's for, there isn't that like, oh, look at this clown, you know, like you lost a fantasy football league or something.
It was a small school. I like my high school I went to was all boys, and it was bigger, you know, student body wise. Brother Rice had at the time was 1,600 students. St. Mary's was 1,200 students, so it was a small school. We had, you know, signs up around campus when teams were playing, but everybody knew it was the start of the hockey season when they saw the hockey players in class with their helmets on. So it was like,
that's awesome.
You know, yeah. After our freshman year kind of died away, I just remember we had to sit through the NCAA, you know, class with somebody from the league, and they were going through hazing and all of this stuff. And, you know, this is the grade point average you have to keep playing this and that. And then they got talk of drugs and alcohol and everything else. And they're like, you know, so some of you are 21, which means you can drink and this and that. And they ask, you know, how many drinks an hour can you have without getting drunk? And one of the sophomore goalies, Eric Richardson, he was one of my first guests. I think it was episode 2. He played for Lake Forest Academy when they won their state championship in Illinois. He raises a hand. He goes, I'm not 21 yet, but if I remember right back to freshman orientation, I believe it's one beer an hour. And the lady starts to go, yeah, very good. He goes, but if you hold the darn thing for more than 15 minutes, it gets warm. So you got to drink it faster. And the coaches are just in the back like, Jesus Christ, Richie. And I mean, we're all just laughing. And this lady's like, yep. So you can drink it in 15 minutes, but then you got to wait 45 for the next one. That's how she handled it. And it's like okay.
It's a pool.
Yeah, it was just funny. He's like, but if you hold the darn thing for more than 15 minutes, yeah. So I got to ask, when you were at Kent State, what did you major in?
So I actually, I still wanted to work in sports. So I actually wanted to become like a sports agent or work in like some sort of marketing with like a team.
Yeah.
And my freshman year, I was taking like a sports management class, and I don't know if it was the teacher didn't like the subject per se anymore, or just the things she chose that were interviews from people. But boy, it was like the saddest people she could find to talk about the industry. Because, you know, it's similar to like playing. Like, you have to work at like an internship with like a minor league something, get paid nothing, embarrass yourself all the time, and hope that someone that you worked for there gets a job somewhere else. That So the way that they're describing, I'm like, you are describing me playing juniors as my career, not even like based on my athletic performance. This sounds terrifying. So I actually ended up switching it just to marketing. So that way I can kind of like have a couple more options. But at the same time, I started doing stand up right before I started going to school. There was like an open mic in town and I realized they weren't carding me because I was performing. So I was like, sure, I'll keep performing and get to drink one beer an hour. And so it kind of became like this thing where I was also really getting into comedy. So I was like, maybe I could work for a comedy club marketing. And inevitably, I actually dropped out and moved to Chicago because I was like, I just want to try to like fully focus on that. Because I, from hockey, you know, you go all in, you play, you're like, if I'm going to commit to just playing juniors and that's it for this thing, like that's been my mindset for everything. It's like, okay, all this is nothing. What I, yeah, if I'm really in on the, it was so funny because my coaches, Kent, his brother was a professional comedian. Like it just happened to be. So when he knew that was happening, it was really encouraging until the end of the season. I was like, man, I'm working a job, going to school, playing hockey, and also trying to get into stand-up. I'm like, I don't think I can do all these. And he's like, so are you going to stop doing stand-up? I'm like, ugh. So, yeah. So he kind of knew what was going on. But, yeah, I moved to Chicago. And
I know the obvious reason because it's got the best food in the world. But, you know, why Chicago over other places? Because, I mean, Toronto's got a great comedy scene.
True. It's tough to like move across the country or to Canada just kind of on a whim like that, especially because you need a skill and you can't be like, I'm going to try to be funny. Can that be my skill to get a visa to live here? But Chicago's great because it does, if you're unaware, it has an amazing comedy scene. Yeah. You know, when I first got there, I wasn't just doing stand up, I was taking improv classes and other like sketch things. And you know, you have IO, Second City, The Annoyance Theater, Zanies, Laugh Factories. I mean, you can't like, it's just literally all around you. And that's kind of what I was looking for, was just this like all in kind of like environment for advancing into comedy, basically.
Yeah, I mean, Second City kind of get, you know, made its name because of Saturday Night Live and the people they've put out, you know, but Chicago comedy, I mean, some of the biggest names in comedy have come through Chicago. At one point or another, they pay their dues there. You know, one of the big names out of Chicago is Chris Farley. And I'll remember going to Catholic high school, I'm in religion class, and my coach or teacher, Coach Dwyer, he starts telling us story. He told us more stories in religion class that should not have been told in a religion class. But he went to Marquette University and he's playing rugby. He's like, no, I shouldn't have been playing rugby because he had a heart condition and already in college had a pacemaker put in.
Oh my God.
He's like, but I didn't tell mom and dad about that, but I'm this freshman rugby player. And you know, we've been practicing for weeks, getting ready for the first game. He goes, first game, this guy comes walking out. He's got a cooler under his arm. He's just chugging beers, walking across the rugby field. He's got a jersey on. He's like, all right, guys, I'm ready to play. And he's like, who is this guy? And, you know, some of the upperclassmen, they're like, oh, that's Chris. He's on the team too. So he played, you know, rugby with Chris Farley at Marquette. And he's like, I've got more Chris Farley stories. So he spent like the next week not teaching anything about, you know, the Catholic faith, but stories about Chris Farley from college. And it would be funny because we come into class, he's like, now don't go to home and tell mom and dad about these stories because then I won't be able to tell you more of them.
Right.
And we're like, okay, all right, good. You know, but yeah, it was funny the stories he came out with. And, you know, some of us would say, we don't know how many of them are true, but I think that's most Chris Farley stories is,
probably
to separate
close to
the
it,
truth
yeah.
from the reality. But yeah, so you know, you're doing comedy. Are you still playing hockey? Because beer league hockey in Chicago is pretty darn good, especially down at like Johnny's. And
so I have had a few other comics that also play hockey. Like you had Scott Darling on, obviously.
Yeah.
We've ran into each other before, but there are other comics that have. My problem has always been I've always had roommates in Chicago. And I have never wanted to subject a roommate to the smell of hockey gear. And I have not been able to really feel out the best situation for that. So like, I didn't have a car for most of my time in Chicago, or I just recently got one for like full-time traveling. But, you know, also the idea of getting on a CTA on the red line to try to grab my stuff. I played some broom ball with some people in town, but honestly, I tried to start playing pickup basketball with other comics because that's obviously a lot easier to pick up. I have never broken a bone playing a sport or playing hockey growing up. I played lacrosse in high school as well. I broke three toes the first time I ever broke a bone playing pickup basketball. No contact either. I just like turned, pivoted, broke three bones. The only time I've ever broken bones were from playing pickup basketball. Well, and then recently I broke a rib falling off an electric scooter, but that's a whole nother story. My most embarrassing injury.
Well, you got to figure out the equipment, airing it out deal, because like you said, Johnny's Ice House had, at least when I would come home on breaks, the best rat hockey in the city. It was like over lunchtime. As a goalie, like I had to get there an hour early so that I made sure I got there, because they would only take three goalies. Oh, you had to sign in. And, you know, so we would just do it like you'd sit for 5 minutes, but you'd be in the net for 10. So it's just a nice rotation. But there was this one guy, he was a cabbie. So he would just get there early, sign in, and then like wait for it. And I was awesome. A college kid. So it's like, I need the skate because I'm at home on break. So I would get there an hour early too, but it's right down by the United Center across from the 911 server. It's great because my dad was
so many
right
of my
there.
Buddies will like say like, well, I've been running into a lot of friends like on the road who've come to shows that I played juniors and like grown up with hockey. And every time one of them's like, oh yeah, my league, I'm like, oh man, you guys make me feel so lazy for not playing. Like, I really do want to get back into it. I've been playing a lot of golf, but you know, that doesn't count. But I do want to.
Well, your schedule makes it hard to commit to a team too, if you're on the road. But I mean, that's where rat hockey is great. And it's funny because I've talked to people like, it's only in Chicago they call it rat hockey. It's like, why doesn't that catch on other places instead of shinny or stick and puck? It's like, those are all stupid.
Stick and
rat
puck's
hockey.
The one I know. Yeah.
Yeah. It's in Chicago, we call it rat hockey because it's all the rink rats that are showing up to play hockey on the open ice. You know,
I mean, the closest I had gotten to it was my school's gym class. I would every once in a while pop in when it was hockey day and do a couple quick dangles, pop one upper in the top shelf, and then be like, all right, I'm out. I'll see you guys later.
Yeah. So I got to ask, you know, when you cross paths with Scott, you know, are you guys talking hockey and goaltending, or is it more the craft of comedy?
So to be fair, I've only run into Scott a handful of times. And during shows, we haven't really been able to talk a lot. We had like I have a joke about playing hockey, and after he pulled me aside at the show,
and was he like, hey, do you know I used to play hockey?
He was like, he kind of did. And I had known he was out there, but so I was really trying to play it cool. Like, I know who you are, but I don't want to be like, oh my God, I can't believe it. Like I knew who he was. Cause I was living in Chicago when they won the Stanley Cup. Right. Like I knew what was going on. So we had a quick, like very quick moment of like, oh, I'm Scott. I played hockey. I'm like, oh, that's so cool. You actually played juniors with a friend of mine. And we had this quick like, oh yeah, the world's so small. You know, this guy's brother who you played with. So we had like a quick conversation like that. I've been gone for most of the year, so we haven't like seen each other. I really have been meaning to like connect some more with him to do the all goalie comedy tour.
Well, I was going to say that because I had Billy Ramirez on, who's on the West Coast, who's also a goalie and a comic. Is like, instead of the blue collar tour, you guys need to have the blue paint tour.
That's honestly, that's amazing. We're going to all get together and write you an act just so you can come along with us, because you coined that. That's so funny. I talked about it with someone, and the two things I think led to me to like the crossover, and I think it makes sense, is like, you stand by yourself, just sitting with your thoughts all the time. Like, I'm used to like filling time and talking, cause I'm used to just standing by myself.
Yeah.
And I growing up, all the road trips I took, my parents, we didn't really listen to a lot of music. We would get like comedy albums from the library. So we were driving around, and I was listening to like Jerry Seinfeld's album and, you know, Bill Engvall and all, Mitch had all these people. That's what we would listen to on these drives or comedy albums. So, and throw in the fact that, like, I know I'm weird. I get it. So it's just like the perfect storm of like a transition between the two. So you let me know when you want to start doing comedy. I'll come up to Minneapolis. We'll do some shows.
You know, it's funny because, like, I am a natural storyteller, which is why I got into journalism right after college and, you know, like trying to make your way in pro sports on the business side of things. You got to move your way around and it just wasn't going to happen. At work now, when I'm talking to my coworkers, I'm like, yeah, funny story. And they're like, enough of your funny stories, because they either end in death or dismemberment. And it's like, yeah, most of my funny stories are dark in some way. Like I was talking about my cousin, she's got this lazy eye. And in the family, they would always talk about her accident. And, you know, that's why she has a lazy eye. And it was a couple weeks before my wedding. We're out to dinner, me, my dad, my uncle, which is her dad. And I'm Irish Catholic. So when I say aunt and uncle, they're not necessarily my mom and dad's brothers and sisters. They're just of that generation.
Yeah. I call them First Communion family members, because they always go to like big family gatherings, but they're not really in the family per se.
But so my uncle was there, and I had a few beers at this point. And he says, well, yeah, you know, Nora's accident. And I said, Uncle Johnny, I've always heard of the accident, but nobody ever explained what the accident was to me. And he's like, well, she was in day camp over the summer, and they went to the Apple River. And the Apple River in Wisconsin it's an actual river, but it's like a lazy river. People just go and they float down it, and it's
going
like
tubing.
It's just this party atmosphere. And she's like, well, there are a couple high school boys on shore, and they were cooking up some corn dogs, and they were asking, you know, the girls that were in charge of this group if they and the kids wanted any. And they're going, yeah. So they start throwing corn dogs. And he goes, well, one of them bounced off an inner tube, comes in the stick lodged in my cousin's eye. Drunk me took every fiber of my body not to spit my beer out and start laughing.
Oh my God.
But I think this is a hilarious story, because my cousin now is fine. Like, she's living a very productive life, happily married, two kids, a very good pediatric nurse. But she's got this lazy eye because she had a corn dog lodged.
Oh my God, that's insane.
Yeah, and you know, and then because my dad's job as a fireman, he's got stories. And one of my favorite ones is there was a person that got hit by a train on the L, and they were doing recovery, finding all of the body parts, and they were missing a foot. And they're like, we can go. We're just missing a foot. And the chief was like, we are not leaving until we find everything. And my dad said they'd already turned off the third rail. They're walking along the tracks, and it was a fresh snow. And somebody saw a hole. Well, there was a homeless person walking by, and they go, hey, can you look in that hole and tell me if there's a shoe? He goes, yeah, there's a shoe. Picks it up. Shows it to him. They go, can you look in the shoe? And the guy goes, what? And they said, look in the shoe and tell us if there's a foot. So the guy looks in the shoe, throws it in the air, starts screaming, runs away. And they go, chief, we found our foot. Again, funny story. God. But when that's what you follow up the corn dog story with, your coworkers start to label you as the dark humor person.
I love this. I think you have a future in it. We're doing this. I'm fully committed to it.
But it's just funny. I think there's enough goalies out there where, you know, find one or two other goalies, you could start the blue paint tour.
There's a Red Wings player that I also saw is now like out on the road or doing comedy shows around. I think it's like Daryl McCarthy or something like that is like doing comedy shows as well now. So, I mean, there's more of us, I guess, out there making the transition than I thought. Oh, Darren McCarthy. Yeah.
He was a musician too, I believe. He used to play, but yeah, I don't know. It would take me some time because I love comedy. We routinely throw on Netflix comedy specials at night when we're trying to, you know, fall asleep. Not because they put us to sleep, but it's like, I don't know. I'd rather find something funny and amusing before I go to bed rather than watch true crime. and then have horrible dreams of like, what's going to kill me tonight. So we do that. But I mean, Jerry Seinfeld's Comedians in Cars, I don't think people appreciate it for what it really is and how he gets into really the craft and the artistry of comedy and what really goes into it. It's not just something where, you know, somebody figures, I'm kind of funny. I'm going to go stand for 5 minutes and tell jokes. It's not that easy. It takes a lot of work. And I think that's what that series really showed in why the good comedians are that special.
My grandma is like aggressively supportive in it, which is so sweet. And she recently mailed with my Christmas present, like 3 pages of a magazine article that she cut out about Adam Sandler and his career. She's like, I sent it to you because, you know, maybe there's something you could take away from it. It's just like so adorable. Yeah, yes. It's so sweet. She's so nice.
That's what grandmas are for. You know, sweet grandmas and dogs. We don't deserve them. They're just stupid to us. And I say sweet grandmas because not all grandmas are sweet. It's funny. My grandma on my dad's side was that sweet grandma. But then my grandma on my mom's side, it was like we called her by her first name.
Oh, wow.
I cut her a little more slack than I think the rest of my cousins, because like I look at my grandma's upbringing. She was a teenager in Holland under Nazi occupation and her family hid Jews.
Yeah, like they'll toughen you up a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I can see why grandma maybe didn't have a nurturing bone in her body, but she was still a little bit of a badass.
That's awesome. My grandma one time tried to pick me up from hockey practice, and they had just bought a Mazda Miata, 2 seats. And we literally drove with like pads in the trunk because that's all that could fit in it.
Yes.
Sticks in the middle, as is how sticks live in cars.
Yeah.
And the bag was like on the back part where the like convertible would sit down, and it's just me holding my bag while we're like driving on the road. So grandparents are sweet.
Yeah. My sweet grandma, she loved Halloween, and I think I was in like second grade and my sister was in the fourth grade, and I think I was a clown that year and she was a hobo. I remember my sister was a hobo. But my grandma was so excited about her costume she went to this like workout group. They called it Get Up and Go, because they would wake up in the morning and go work out. Okay. So she was so excited about her costume that year. She was the Jolly Green Giant. Like she had the green face paint and had this. So she loved it so much. She insisted on picking me and my sister up from school in costume. And she's like, now I'm not just going to wait outside and pick them up. I'm going to go a few minutes early. So I have to go to their classroom and pick them up. My sister was mortified because, you know, she's a fourth grader at this point. Like, not only is my grandma picking me up early, but she is dressed as the Jolly Green Giant. And of course, the only picture we have of this day is a blurry picture of the three of us standing together after she picks us up from school, and I'm standing there. I'm just this happy little clown with my grandma, and my sister is this angry, depressed hobo. Like, my life is ruined. Grandma just picked me up dressed like a Jolly Green Giant. But the fact that it's blurry, I don't know if that makes that picture better or sucks because you don't see the true crisp look on my sister's face.
You know, it's one of those things that you get to have a little creative liberties with how you remember the moment, fill in the blanks of it. That's fun. Yes. That's a fun one.
But it was amusing when my grandma did pass away, and me and my sister and my cousins were going through all these pictures, and we came across that one. And my sister finally saw how actually sweet and amusing that was, but she's like, I just remember being so pissed that day. Like, oh my God. Yes. Well, we've been talking over an hour now, and I know you've listened to some episodes, so you know that I close out every episode with 10 questions.
I've been prepping for it. Oh, yeah, I'm ready.
So the first one is, what is your craziest coaching moment from your playing days?
I feel like I've had plenty of fair shares of coaches kicking garbage cans. I think we've all had a coach come in, and but I'll never forget this. This was like, it's like a quote whenever I see my like old hockey, we'll say it, but like a coach came in and said, you got to get in there and fight them like you're taking a rusty spoon and carving out their balls. And like that just like imagery has stuck with me forever. Just like scooping out their balls with a rusty spoon. It was just like, it's just a thing I'll never forget. I mean, that or, again, goalies getting switched, like players 5 to 7. You could take, I think either one of those would be very good answers for those.
Tendy Talk listeners, this time of year, everyone's talking about making big changes, which is all well and good, but most of the time, pretty unrealistic. I've actually found that the smallest changes to your routine can make the biggest impact. In the same way, you don't have to break the bank to make big deal purchase. Even the smallest things can be a part of a big change. If that's something you can use every day, like my Raycon earbuds. Raycon is premium audio at the perfect price point, so you can build great habits without breaking the bank. My kids love that they don't have to listen to my Irish punk music because of them. Whether you're looking for a pair of everyday earbuds, low latency gaming headphones, something my son would be into, or a speaker with a battery that will last all night at your next party, Raycon's got you covered. And yep, Raycons start at half the price of other premium audio brands. So you don't even have to choose between products. You can get one of each or pair and a spare, kind of like the British royalty, and still pay less than you would with some of the other guys. Even if you know you'll love your Raycons as much as I do, Raycon wants to make sure you feel great about your purchase. They offer buy now, pay later options. Every purchase has an easy and free return guarantee as well. Options like 3 customizable sound profiles, noise isolation, and crystal clear call quality are all part of their products. Ready to buy something small with a big impact? Go to buyraycon.com/THPN today and get 15% off your Raycon order. That's buyraycon.com/THPN to score 15% off. buyraycon.com/THPN.
So as I'm thinking about your blue paint comedy tour, I remember Blue Collar, they would end with all of them sitting on a panel asking questions. And I think that's where these come in. So the next one is, what's your favorite all-time goalie mask?
So I really loved, I actually really loved Chris Osgood growing up. He was my favorite. I love the goofy like player mask. I think those were so cool. I guess paint job. I also, on the opposite, love Patrick Waugh. So his masks, I think, were always like pretty legendary in my mind.
And I love that he kept the same look for so long, too. Mm-hmm. And that was something of that era, too, where the guys, like, they had a look and they stuck with it.
Brodeur's the same way, I feel. Mm-hmm. I think about him as well. Like, you know, he had a very, like, signature thing that was like a team logo that he manipulated to be like his. I don't want to call it a brand because that makes it sound like,
well, it did wind up becoming his brand,
right. Yeah, that's fair.
I
do a sports podcast with my girlfriend where I teach her about sports because she's a musical theater background, and an episode we just did was on Sean Avery, so I was explaining the Sean Avery rule, right? Like turning around, and we were just at this minor league hockey game. She's like, all I keep picturing is someone standing in front of the goalie, turning around and waving at them crazy now the entire game. It's all I could think about. I'm like, yeah, it's insane that he did that.
So how in depth did you go into Sean Avery? Because there's a personality. He should have been a goalie. Because he's certifiably like nuts. I mean, he stepped away from hockey to do an internship at Vogue. But then when you see how he dresses, it's like, what do you know about fashion?
Right? I love that.
You know.
We went pretty deep. Like I try to hit all the highlights I can when I do these. Like, you know, you could do hours worth on a lot of these people. Yeah. But I think I tried to hit like a lot of the highlights of like, you know, he signed with the Solar Bears recently and all these other players came out of asking to come out of retirement just to fight him. Yeah. So
because you talk about his vigilante antics riding the bike lane in New York City.
He wants to be the voice for the scooter lane, the bike lane. Yeah. He wants to do PSA. But also, like, you know, he had, like, a lot of positivity. Like, he was one of the first, like, athletes to come out and be, like, an ally for, like, the LGBT community, yep. You know, like, stuff like that. But then, you know, he was, like, said racial comments to players. I remember the sloppy seconds comment he made on, like, a newscast. And I remember being like, wow, like, people are talking about hockey on ESPN, not like just randomly for a sliver of it, which sucks because it was him gossiping. But still, he was just such a polarizing player that like he's just fascinating to me. And my girlfriend's really big into the Real Housewives, and
my wife is.
There's a crossover where Andy Cohen at one point was rumored to be engaged with Sean Avery, so that was like a little bit of a crossover. I could like. Look, your world and my world, it connected here.
Yep. Yeah. No, I know more about the Real Housewives than I care to admit. Because
which
of my
city
wife.
Is your favorite?
I don't have one. I hate them all equally. Yeah, they're all horrible.
That's amazing.
Oh my God. Like she turns it on and I will leave the room and she's like, what? It's like, no. I don't have the mental capacity to listen to this. And it's like, and you wonder what is wrong with society. It's because we have TV shows like this, you know. Now, like Andy Cohen has had Jeff Lewis on the Watch What Lives quite a bit. Mm-hmm. He's got a cool real estate show. Like, I like Jeff Lewis. We need more of that. It still gives you a little bit of the drama, but it's like, we don't need the angry housewives. And it's like,
they're so formulaic. I mean, there is a comfort to it at some point watching them. But yeah, I don't yuck anyone's yum on those. But also, like, yeah, I get it. No,
they're so almost funny. As predictable as a Hallmark Christmas movie at this point.
I mean, they have beef. They talk about the beef. They go on a trip. They have a beef on the trip. Then they go and talk about the beef from the trip after. And then rinse and repeat. And that is every season.
But then they make up and then they come on to the reunion show. And it's like, oh my God, I can't believe you said that about me. It's like you spent three entire episodes talking about it.
You are deep in it. The fact that you know that, like that really shows your true colors of how much knowledge base you know about this unintentionally.
I may have to cut this part out of the podcast so that people don't think less of me. But you know, when you're married for 18 years, you have to spend time with your significant other doing the things that make them happy.
Yeah.
The Real Housewives is that.
Yeah, I'm used to just like having my laptop out in front. So I'll like, okay, I'm going to watch whatever sporting events going on. Sure. We'll have Kardashians or whatever it is on the screen, but I'm really focusing on this.
Like, there's the thing, like she'll be watching the Housewives or the Kardashians and like, I'll be like, okay, I'm going to look at my phone. She's like, you're always on your phone. It's like, I'm reading about what's going on in Ukraine right now. I'm like actually learning about something. And then if I'm watching a hockey game and she's on her phone, I'm like, you're on your phone. And she's like, because this doesn't interest me. It's like, same difference, but okay. Once again, we've digressed into something else. So what is your favorite rink that you've played at?
Oh man. So my favorite rink I've ever played at probably has to be, there's one in Oak Park, Michigan, or Hazel Park. Sorry. It's this old barn I used to play Honey Baked at. And it is like, you know, when you go see like bleachers that you can see the like rings of like people have stood and like paced on them. Like,
yes,
this was the level. Like, this place old. The locker rooms are way too small. Like, it was an old, old barn, but it was one of those places where I always played amazing and it was just like very dimly lit. So I just loved this place. I don't know why. Yeah, Hazel Park out in Michigan. Least favorite rank, Joe Louis.
I wish I could have made it to Joe Louis Arena, but everybody I've talked to that's been there is it's a loved or hated place because it had a character of the old barns that they just don't have in new buildings. It's like Chicago Stadium. That place was amazing. Mm-hmm. But if you went in there today without the history of the Chicago Stadium, you'd be like, this place is a dump, you know, and Joe Louis, it sounds like, was kind of the same way.
My problem, and again, a hockey friend of mine will, whenever we see and it comes up, he will chirp me for this. But like playing Little Caesars, that used to be their home rink for a lot of games. And it must be great when it's full of fans, but the seats, when they're completely empty, are like gray on the bottom. So when all of them are up, the puck goes up, you just lose it in these like white, gray seats. So it was just like awful to play in. Like, I hated it. You know, I'm sure if it was packed and everything, it'd be cool. But yeah, I just, not a fan.
I'm a Hawks fan. So any bad words about Detroit, I'm on board with. So what's your favorite stick that you've used?
I was using Sherwoods. I pretty much have used Sherwoods my entire life. I would, when I was getting to midgets and after, I would shave down the like handle because I love holding mid handle. Like, I know there was a lot of the sticks with the like trigger gun, but I would have it like literally like pyramid out so I could like hold that thing in the middle.
Yeah. Who is it? Lundqvist did that too, I think.
Mm-hmm, yeah. I taped it. Yeah. There's so many. I've heard you guys talk about like the crazy, like curved ones at the top.
Yeah. The Curtis like curves. That. Yeah,
but Sherwoods with it was the goalie that I always had his curve. I'm blanking on it, but yeah, the Sherwood twigs were my favorite.
That was probably the 99-50, and I think Theodore used those.
I think that's what. Yeah, but he was a lefty, right?
He was a lefty, but they still made the curve for righties. I'm trying to think of Brodeur used them for a while after Heaton. Trying to think of who else. I mean, Sherwoods were in the 90s, a bunch of goalies were using them. That's one of the few sticks I didn't use, though.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, my first stick was a Vic. I had a Titan. I had Cooper, Bauer, Christian. I loved Christian sticks.
Those are like iconic for goalie sticks, those Christian sticks. Yeah.
Christian, CCM, Warrior. But I haven't used a Sherwood. Now, Sherwood PMP Featherlight Coffee Curve, that is my forward stick of choice. In fact, when my daughter wanted a stick, because she doesn't play hockey, but she wanted a stick because of pond hockey, and then we had a backyard rink for a while, I went out and bought her the Sherwood coffee because it was $20, brand new.
That's awesome.
It's like, I'm not spending $300 for a, you know, stick you're going to hardly use. And she's like, that works. So what is your favorite youth hockey memory?
So I think it's kind of like a collection of it. I think when I first started going on the traveling for hockey and I was missing school on Fridays, that was definitely my favorite. Like, just knowing like, oh man, I have to drive to Michigan. It seems like a big deal, but just getting to miss school for hockey was probably my favorite growing up. It seems like very dumb, but it was like, it was amazing. Like, I just had, you know, I went to a very small school in the middle of Ohio. I think I had like
18. Isn't every school in Ohio small?
This one, I had 18 kids in my graduating eighth grade class. Wow. So like, we were a tight little group. So getting to like leave when, and again, so small that like leaving, you almost, that is your family because we knew each other all 8 years, that like small 18 group. So getting to leave really felt like a one up over some of my other friends. I also got to go to like Sweden and Finland and play hockey over there. Oh, and that was pretty cool. Like, we were like 14, 15. It was like a select team over a summer we went. And that was really awesome. we got destroyed in every game, but it was like very cool to just experience. I went to like Finnish school for a day, and I forget that they know English better than I know Finnish.
Yeah,
I don't. And I got taken to like an English class, and I was like, "Hey, I'm Tyler." And these kids started mocking me, like, "Hi, I'm Tyler." I'm like, "Oh, you guys speak English just fine. Okay." So hockey adjacent, but like, yeah, that's probably one of the things that sticks out to me the most.
You talk about leaving school on Fridays, and there's a meme here in Minnesota where mom's calling in school and she's like, "Yeah, Johnny's not going to be in school today. He's not feeling good." And the nurse is on the other line going, "We know Johnny has an out of town tournament this weekend. Good luck."
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you're not fooling anybody. We know what's going on when it happens every 2 weeks. So what's the best chirp you heard on the ice, off the ice, directed at you, not directed at you?
So this one I was having a hard time with. And then I think, honestly, my girlfriend at the game, she's great at yelling chirps, and this one stuck out. She yelled during the game, "Hey Johnson," the goalie's last name, "you suck more than your mom did last night." And it was just so fun. And you know, there's not a lot of people at the game, so her yelling that, like, it was just like audibly everyone laughed around, because it was just, you know, good family fun at the rink. But yeah, that was so funny. I loved it. It was so much fun.
Yeah. Well, and the fact that like she's learning sports and can already chirp, it's kind of like Kenny Wu learning how to chirp in D2.
Yeah.
You know,
great.
Hey, 18, you're not very good at hockey.
Well, she for the longest time didn't realize that when you get a penalty, it's to lose a player and an advantage for the other team. We talked about this on the Avery episode, but like, she thought because of the movie Slapshot, it's more just to make you feel bad as like a cool down. And I was like, so she interpreted like him at the beginning, like, "You go to the box and you feel shame." She took that as like, well, that's why you get a penalty, not because of an advantage that happens to it. So,
well, at least at least she's seen Slapshot.
Yes. Yes. I've been slowly like getting her to watch hockey. I'm trying to get her to see Youngblood is the next one. I think that's like a real deep
cut.
It's
got Rob Lowe, so she'll like it.
Yeah, exactly. You know. I'm Patrick Swayze's in it. Early Keanu as a goalie making a bad French-Canadian accent. That movie has everything.
If I could ever find the contact info for his people, I would love to get him on the podcast to talk goaltending. Because like, he played. You know,
walk around Chicago.
Time.
You could probably run into him. He's out there.
Probably. Him and Steve Carell, I'd love to get them on to talk. Because Steve Carell was a goalie too.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah, he had that great bit on The Daily Show of a goalie practicing by himself.
Okay, I'll have to look that up. I don't remember that.
And then for fun, me and my kids decided to recreate that frame by frame on the backyard rink. I'll have to send you the link to our recreation.
Yeah, please do. That's amazing. I love that.
But yeah, it was just kind of funny. You know, we were bored. I think it was actually my 40th birthday. I had the day off of work. They had off school. And so we're out there doing this. My wife's like, "You guys are idiots." She's like, but it did turn out pretty good.
That's great.
So anyways, moving on. What is the worst post-game beer you've had?
I remember the first time I was like playing men's. I mean, it was like a bad Michelob Ultra or like a Michelob. Not Ultra. It was like a Molson Light or something that's, you know, somebody had it in their car all day because they left like in the morning, go to work, knew they had to come to the game after. And boy, those things spoil pretty hard. So that's probably the worst one.
For our first game of the winter season, you know, because my team doesn't charge me to play, and first game, they all got to pay the team captain. So I'm like, all right, I'm not the one forking over money for the season, so I might as well bring the beer. So I went to the local liquor store, and they got one of these walk-in coolers. And I was apparently in there longer than most people. And I came out, and the lady's like, trying to decide what to get, and this is what you came out with? Because I just picked up Coors Banquet. And I was like, well, I'm a bit of a craft beer snob, but I'm picking up beer for my hockey team tonight. So I had to find something that was cheap enough for them, but good enough for me. You know, it's like I had to find that fine line where it's like, yeah, it's because my guys will bring Busch Light to, you know, a game and think it's great. I'm like, that's not the case.
Well, here's the real question. Where do you stand on Malort then?
No, Malort wasn't the thing when I was growing up. So like, I'm Irish Catholic. I'm from the Beverly Moncrunewood neighborhood. Like, no, we drink the real stuff. It's Irish whiskey.
That's awesome.
Yeah, no, that's, you bring Malort out just to embarrass people who aren't from the city. That's what it's for.
I love, like, oh yeah, that is, I love, that is like, I've almost lived, it's almost been 10 years I've lived in Chicago, and that is like the one piece of, like, I feel like a real Chicagoan anytime I force someone to make a Malort shot when they don't know what's happening. And that is like my favorite thing.
And I think that's the beauty of Malort, is it's so Chicago in that it's like, we say it's a Chicago thing so that people try it.
They're like, oh, I love deep dish. The hot dogs are great. Let's try Malort. You're like, yeah.
It's a Chicagoan's way to like pick on somebody without them knowing it, which makes it funny.
Absolutely.
You know, because to your point, like, oh, deep dish. And I remember when I was at college, you know, St. Mary's, like half the schools from the Chicagoland area. And I say the Chicagoland area because I think in the, there's pre-Facebook, like freshman connection, it had everybody's addresses so you could keep in contact at the end of the school year. Only like three of us actually are from Chicago proper. Okay. One of my buddies was from Johnsburg, Illinois, which is at the border of Wisconsin. He said he was from Chicago. We're like, no, you're better off saying you're from Milwaukee than you are from Chicago. But one of the kids from Minnesota, he's like, so when you guys order Chicago style pizza, how do you order it? And we go, we just order pizza.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
square pieces. That's how we order it.
Right. That's the thing too, is most people think Chicago style is deep dish. Yeah, it is. But everyday pizza is thin crust,
tavern, you know, style.
Yeah. And I'm a Nick and Vito's kid. That's where we grew up going to get our pizza, on the south side by Midway. That's my place.
Rules.
So when you tape your stick, do you go heel to toe or toe to heel?
Toe to heel. Absolutely. You got that like toe to like first tape margin. You got to have that perfect. That's what I truly believe.
So you're in the minority there.
I know. That's okay. Yeah. Hey, I'm willing to die on this hill and be the face for it.
And I've said this before. I've had two different guests say anybody that goes toe to heel is a psychopath. And the best part was, like, the second person that said it hadn't heard the other episode. So, like, these are two unsolicited people saying, I'm not going that far, but just letting you know that other people think that of you. So what's your favorite number to wear and why?
So I was 29 pretty much my entire life. I love 29. This is going to be very hockey of me, but I actually have a 29 tattoo on me. This is my goalie tattoo I got. It's, I thought this was so clever when I was 18. It's a bullseye, like a sniper, like whatever. I mean, like a scope, and then the number 29 in it. 'Cause my thought was like, well, my number's 29 and people are shooting at me. This is my awesome hockey tattoo.
Yeah.
So yeah, 29. And then I wore 49 in juniors because 29 wasn't available when I was like coming back to the team. So I like weird numbers. So 49 and 29 were the two I went with.
That works. So the last question, what advice do you have for young goalies?
I mean, I think remembering that like people love you. Being the goalie sucks. And I think it is something to like learning the responsibility of like, hey, once something happens to you, you need to like figure it out, move on to the next one. I think that's like a skill you learn as being the goalie that you don't like actively think about. So I think like learning to not like beat yourself up over things like that is so mentally healthy for yourself. And I think it makes me like a really strong person now to like, cool, like things happen. I'm not like stressing over it. I'm like, the light's already on. I can't make it turn off. Let's move on to the next play. I think just like remembering and like trying to remember the things you learn in hockey, have like life experience things that can help you. So that's the one. And learn to juggle, honestly. I think that's such a good thing to have in your back pocket.
I've tried to learn to juggle and I can't do it. I don't know what the issue is. I don't know.
Gotta start slow.
You know, but, you know, your point about letting things go is so true, because I find like I'm able to let things go. It's not that I don't forget them. I don't learn from them. It's just I move on from them. I've learned what I needed to learn and I move on from it. And I think it's because of being a goalie. Like somebody scores on you. Okay, great. They're about to drop the puck again. You got to move on from it. And, you know, I think that has helped me in life. You know, you have a bad day at work. Okay, great. Tomorrow's a new day. Tomorrow's a new day of work. This is going to sound bad, but my mom passed away on Mother's Day. And like Christmas came around, my wife said, you know, you're handling this first Christmas like way better than I would have ever been able to myself. And I was like, it's not that I've moved on, you know, from mom, but it's like, okay, you know,
I know I have to.
So, yeah, I have to. They've dropped the puck on life. game, you know, play has resumed and I can sit here and keep letting pucks go by because I'm focusing on that. Or I can, you know.
Or you could spend too much time like showing the emotion of like, I am mad that I let that go.
Yeah.
And like, I'm so upset. Look, everyone gets to see like I am reacting to it instead of like, it was such a valuable skill to learn the like putting on the show of being upset and like adjusting to do better. Just moving forward is such a good thing to know. Like, sure, it's cool to show everyone like I'm mad because this happened, but it's a lot better to like get it out, move on to the next thing, and like be the best version of yourself to keep going on. So
yeah, it's almost like driving in Chicago. It's like somebody cuts you off, you honk the horn, you flip them off, you yell, you get it out of your system, and you go on.
Absolutely.
It's funny because I would bring friends from college home for St. Patrick's Day, the real parade on the south side, not the downtown one.
Okay.
And I would take them downtown and I would drive and, you know, I'm using the horn, I'm yelling, everything else. And like, oh my God, you're so angry. Like, you're a different person when you drive. It's like, well, that's how you drive the Dan Ryan. Like,
right, yeah.
That's just how you do it. But once I parked the car, it was like, okay, cool. Like, just nice, calm, cool, collected. And they're like, you're not so angry. It's like, no, the yelling and the honking and the flipping people off gets it out of my system.
Yeah, that's me being on the ice. Once I'm off it, we can have a beer and chill. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate your time. I have a feeling we're going to be keeping in touch. You know,
I'd love that. This was great. This was so much fun.
Getting the Blue Paint comedy tour started.
Honestly, I'm about to message Scott right after this.
So. Yeah, Scott, reach out to Billy. I've had at least three different comedic goalies on the podcast, so I'll find another one to round out the foursome for you. But thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Be sure to keep an eye out for the Blue Paint comedy tour. All joking aside, that was a fun conversation with Tyler. I have a feeling he and I will be continuing the conversation in the future, probably after I watch him do one of his comedy sets here in Minnesota. Be sure to visit Tyler's website, tylertellsjokes.com, to see his upcoming tour dates and follow him on Instagram and TikTok at tylertellsjokes and on Twitter at @tweetTyler. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube simply by searching for Wash Up Goalie and I'll pop up. Visit washupgoalie.com for some great hockey-related content, my Beer League hockey video highlights, and of course, all podcast episodes. If you want some Wash Up Goalie or Tendy Talk apparel, be sure to visit my Threadless shop by clicking the merchandise link on my website. If you like this podcast, go listen to the BLPA Big Show. It's the OG BLPA Podcast Network show where a couple of Beer League players talk Beer League hockey, draft experience shenanigans, and exploits from around the game. Be sure to check out the full lineup of hockey-related podcasts on the Hockey Podcast Network as well. There are too many to list here, but shows like the Hockey Minds podcast, the Pucks in Deep podcast, and the Dump and Change podcast can all be found. If you're looking for something good to read, get yourself a subscription to the Vintage Tendy magazine. Published quarterly by episode 28 guest Brent Denoer, the magazine takes a deep dive into a goalie from the 80s or 90s era. In the first six issues, they've covered Potvin, Fuhr, Cheveldae, Tebow, Reggett, Van Beesbrouck, and episode 20 guest, mask painter and creator Don Strauss. The latest issue zeroes in on Darren Poopa. I want to thank the band The Zamboni for allowing me to use their music on all my episodes. You can download their music on iTunes or listen wherever you stream music from. I'm always working on lining up other goalies to talk to. If you are a goalie or have connections to a goalie who I should talk to, shoot me an email at washedupgoalie39@gmail.com or send me a DM on social media. That's how Tyler and I got connected. Let's not forget, if you're a band that wants to sponsor the show, be sure to reach out to me. Be happy to talk. And finally, if you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe, rate, and comment on the podcast platform you're listening on. It's a quick action on your part that helps others find Tendy Talk. Until next time, keep your stick on the ice and your body square to the puck.
Good news?
Well, Dave, the pond?
Yeah. It's froze right over.